Welcome back to the Classic Rock Podcast. And coming up this month, we will begin, as we always do, with a roundup of all of the interesting news that has made the headlines over the course of the last month. Our classic interviews this month, well, 2019 is the 40th anniversary of AC/DC releasing Highway to Hell. So I've dug up a great old interview with the legendary frontman Bon Scott, who's talking about, amongst other things, Three Nights in Great Yarmouth and what they got up to on Three Nights in Great Yarmouth. Staying on the AC/DC theme, as it appears we are going to get a new album at some point, and Brian Johnson is back in the fold, as is Cliff Williams and indeed Phil Rudd. We're going to go back to 1980 as Brian Johnson talks about his first ever live gig with AC/DC following the death of Bon Scott. So what's new in the news then this month? Well, the Grammy nominations are out, and those take place at the Staples Center in LA on February the 10th of this year. And prominent, very prominent indeed, is the name of Greta Van Fleet. They're up for Best Rock Performance for Highway Tune and Best Rock Album for From the Fires. They have, of course, since released a new album, Anthem of the Peaceful Army. Now, a lot of people just don't get the fuss. A lot of people have said that they're simply Led Zeppelin or Rush clones, which is a little unfair. So what I thought we'd do is let's have a listen to the song which is up for the best rock song, rock performance in this year's Grammys. It's called Highway Tune. There it is then, Greta Van Fleet with their Grammy nomination. And yes, there are clear influences from eras gone by, most notably the late 60s and the early 70s. But so what? Everybody was influenced by someone at some stage in their career. And I think Roger Glover summed it up perfectly. He said a couple of days ago in an interview that if they had been around in the 1970s, then they would have been huge. Somebody who was huge. Queen, the film Bohemian Rhapsody, has been nominated for 2 Golden Globes as well. It'll be very interesting to see if Rami Malek is nominated for an Oscar. He's up for Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture. The film is also nominated for Best Picture in the Drama category. And they won't have long to wait either to find out if they've been successful. The 76th Golden Globes take place at the Beverly Hilton on January the 6th. And if you're over in the States, then you can look forward to seeing Queen and Adam Lambert. They head out on the road on their North American tour in July and August of this year, and there is talk of a new Queen album. Now, there's been lots of Pink Floyd chatter and talk on the internet. As we know, Roger Waters has teased that he will play on a couple of live tracks with Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets at some point this year. No idea where or on what night. Nick Mason himself has called for Waters and Gilmour to end their standoff and their feud before it is too late. "I live in hope," he told Rolling Stone. So do we, Nick. So do we. Lindsay Buckingham is no longer living in hope. He's just waiting for the phone to ring because he's been in touch with his former bandmates about a lawsuit that we were talking about a month ago. Well, it's been settled. Then an email appeared from Christy McVie saying, "I have had nothing to do with any of this. I miss you so much, and I believe deep down that Stevie would love to have you come home." Well, a little surprise there, or perhaps not. I don't know whether he actually received that email before he spilled a bit of vitriol on the current lineup by saying that it is a covers band. And so, as we head into 2019, it is reassuring to know that rock music's longest-running soap opera is going to roll on. Of course, all we're waiting for after the end of the tour, which they're doing this year, which comes over to Europe in the summer, is, of course, the final hurrah, the original lineup, or as close to original as they can get, with Lindsay Buckingham back in the fold. Now, this was a brilliant story, and I swear it is true. It's 35 years ago, it was in November, that Neil Young was served with a writ by his then record company, Geffen. They were suing him because he was making albums on a consistent basis that didn't sound like Neil Young, and they didn't like it because they'd signed Neil Young up on a contract to deliver albums that sounded like Neil Young. The lawsuit was settled, and there was an apology from Geffen. Might dig one of those albums out just to hear how a non-sounding David Crosby album actually sounds like. Talking about new music, Mick Jagger has teased throughout the course of the year that there could be some with the Stones, and Keith Richards has followed it up by saying that it could come out in 2019. They've reunited recently and spent time in the studio and put some new tracks down and are due to meet up again mid-December. They've got a big North American tour coming up in the summer, so the likelihood is, if at all, it would be continued and maybe put out towards the end of this year, or more likely sometime in 2020. Now, Jimmy Page has been in the news, and I'm not referring to this long-running battle that he's been having with Robbie Williams about putting a swimming pool in his basement. But Jimmy Page has been saying that new product from him will be coming out in 2019. And what's more, that it won't be anything to do with Led Zeppelin remasters or reissues. Now, could be a solo album, but more likely it's a revisit to that fine body of work that he put together with Robert Plant's best pal, David Coverdale. There are unreleased songs and videos which were recorded, and it's rumoured that they could be put together in a box set or luxury edition of sorts next year. More plaudits for Queen the band, as Bohemian Rhapsody the song was named as the most streamed song of the 20th century, with 1.6 billion plays across all the platforms. And the film continues to break records as well, overtaking the Johnny Cash biopic to become the biggest grossing film of its type ever. And look out, because there's a slew of other ones coming up. There's going to be one on Prince, there's Elton John's to come. Plus, get this, there's one on Arnel Pineda, the extraordinary Steve Perry soundalike from the Philippines, who was plucked from YouTube to front Journey. And there's more good news for British bands. It's not just Queen, but Def Leppard have won the fans' votes for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by a huge margin of 547,000 votes. They were ahead of Stevie Nicks on 472. Also behind them was Todd Rundgren, The Zombies, and The Cure as well. So the nomination is there. All they need now is the induction. Be a brave panel, wouldn't it, to not induct them after the year that they've just concluded. One of the most successful tours of any band around the world. They've played everywhere to sold-out venues and incredible reviews as well. Also concluding what's been a fine year, Guns and Roses, and there are unconfirmed, obviously, reports saying that Guns and Roses have returned to the studio after the last couple of months to record a track for a new Mark Bolan tribute album. They are alleged to have done Children of the Revolution. Slash was talking about that last month and the possibility of new material, saying that they all wanted to do it. It was simply finding the time to do it. But there was a further update issued on that this week. There was an interview with Richard Fortus, the guitarist, and he was asked the same question about new music, new album. It will be coming faster than you think, he said. We're hoping to get one out very soon. Now, it's obviously not known if that is get the track Children of the Revolution out or get a new album out. Time, of course, will tell. It has been very quiet on the Van Halen front. Always tends to be, doesn't it? Last time they were seen was back in 2015. But David Lee Roth has had a few quotes seized upon by a Van Halen hungry media. When we come back, he said, and when we roll through town, which will be this summer, and we do the original thing, maybe somewhere sporting, he said, maybe with somebody famous. We'll be playing where the Yankees play. Well, take out of that what you will, but it sounds as if Van Halen have a summer tour lined up for this year. Once again, it appears it'll only be over in the States. But who knows? Stranger things have happened. I can't remember the last time Van Halen played over in Europe. All I know is I did see them when they did live right here, right now. Sammy Hagar was at the helm then, and he's got his new album coming out very early in the new year. So it'll be good to see him back over in Europe. Saw him a few years ago with Chickenfoot up at the Shepherd's Bush Empire. What a great night that was, with Chad Smith smashing up the drum kit. We mentioned the stream of biopics coming out after the success of Freddie Mercury's biopic. The one that we didn't mention was Motley Crue's The Dirt. It's finally got a release date of March 2019, and Vince Neil was quoted as saying, just left the Netflix offices having seen The Dirt movie, and it was awesome. Nikki Sixx also added comments on the four new tracks they recorded for the film with the legendary producer Bob Rock. His words were, the songs crush. Next year is the 40th anniversary of the release of Highway to Hell from AC/DC, for many their best ever album. Front and centre, of course, was the man once described as the greatest frontman ever in rock history. His name, Bon Scott, of course. His mantra for life and for AC/DC, simple. The songs, he said, reflect who we are. Booze, women, sex, rock and roll. That's what life's all about. So part one then of the classic interviews this week is Bon Scott from circa 77-78, just before they headed off to start work on what would become Highway to Hell.
Well, he was a difficult man to find in Australia when they were out there recording, and he was pretty difficult to find here, but welcome to the program, Bon Scott, AC/DC.
Oh, thank you, Ian.
Now, in fact, the last time I saw you was when we did the 100th show over here. When you went out to Rowe Halliford Studio.
Uh-huh.
That was a good day, wasn't it?
Well, it took time to get the show together. It was a really good day because the bar was open the whole time.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes, well, we're right about the bar. But listen, seriously, what are you doing at the moment? What are the group doing? You've just come back from America.
Well, we're doing an English tour at the moment. Yeah. The last gig is about 3 days at Great Yarmouth. I suppose you've all heard of Great Yarmouth. We just finished.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
No, good place.
Oh, let me tell you about Great Yarmouth.
Oh, no, that's not.
Carry on.
Right, keep going. Okay.
Just finished the European tour and spent 7 weeks in America. So we really are, getting around.
Right, well, let's go back about a year ago when I was over here doing interviews and that. And at that stage, in the music papers especially, like Sounds, NME, Melody Maker, you were never out of the papers, right? There was always a story about you. You were filling out the marquee every night, and you were sort of what most people termed as the first of the punk bands to emerge. Now, since then, the Sex Pistols and so on and so on, and now you've got, Every Man and His Dog, with, similar names, that term themselves as punk rock bands or a new wave band. You've been away, you've been to America, you've broken into the American charts, and I've got my hand over the mic again. You've been away, you've been...
Shouldn't have the mic down there, Ian.
I know. You've been away, you've been on the, you've made the American charts, you're very big in Europe. What does it feel like now to come back with all of this new wave sort of going crazy in England? And are you pulling crowds still?
Well, we're pulling bigger crowds than they are,
Yeah?
I mean, we've got our following here. It's not new wave and it's not punk. It's just people that like our band, our rock band, And we honestly thought that the punk and the new wave thing might sort of spoil a bit for us, but it hasn't at all,
Yeah.
It was a big fad, it's just like anything else, a big fad for a while, and there's those that are still hanging on to it. But the main thing about it is that it gives rock music a real kick in the gut,
Yeah.
And we sort of, even though we started the whole thing over here, we played here before the Sex Pistols were even sort of, thought of.
Yeah.
And now we've always been there, and people are beginning to realise that now they want more than just some, someone up there screaming, anarchy and rape and this sort of, crap, And we're it. Yeah. We're doing it right.
Now, the thing is that you've always been a very tight rock and roll band, but for some reason, you've concentrated a lot on the live performances, especially in England.
That's all there is.
But there's never been a really definite single released on the English market, or there's been some confusion about the single. Why is this?
Well, singles for a start.
And I might add, just before you answer that, because I want you to answer another one, there's a little bit of confusion of what's happening in Australia with your singles too. So could you clear it all up, Bob?
Okay, now we'll start with England,
Right.
Now, singles bands over here, or bands that release singles that take off, without already having established a road following, are going to suffer the same effects as has Sherbet, They had a big record over here, and their English tour consisted of one gig, Because no slant on them, but they're a record band, And they had no road following, so no one comes to see their shows, So we have the following. If we release a single here now, it would do really well. Excuse me. Have our following,
Well, why isn't there a single release now? Or,
Well, we don't write the singles, We don't write singles.
Of course you do.
We have done in the past, but we don't write something specifically for a single.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
But it's common for any group to bring out a single.
We're an album band. We're a road album band, Singles don't mean a pinch to anybody, in our band. There's no sense in them. Like, if some station picks up, like the BBC, which they probably never would,
Yeah.
then it might get played and it might you know, make the charts, but there's no way we'd do it intentionally to make a single.
Well, does the same go for Australia?
Oh, no, Australia's a different different market altogether, you know? And there, if there's a likely single on an album, it'll be released as a single, but over here the album's the main thing, you know? And if a station picks a track that they sort of like to play a lot, well, it'll sell the album, not the single.
Yeah. Now, with Mark leaving the group, how's the new member fitted in?
Oh, fits quite nicely, yeah. It's yeah. Pretty good, yeah.
Did he alter the band in any way, the sound or anything like that?
Well, he's a guy that's been playing for a lot longer than Mark ever played. Like, you know, Mark played with us for 2 years, probably been playing bass for about 3, whereas Cliff has been playing for about 12 years. You
know? Yeah.
And so his technique is sort of far, I'd say, advanced, you know, to what Mark's was, although Mark's for the rock stuff was cool, you know. Cliff's just given us more sort of, more scope. Like, there's more you can do with the music. It's in between the guitars, like Angus, I mean, more Malcolm and Cliff than could be done before.
Now, you've always, since you've been away, you've always gone back to Australia to record. Why is that? And I believe you're going back again to record.
Well, you know, it sort of coincides a few things, like holidays, you see your mum and dad, you know, and all your mates, and George and Harry are there, and the studios are there, and they know the studios like the back of their hand, you know. And it's just been a perfect setup, and we can spend unlimited time in the studio. It's all there. There's no need to go anywhere else, because, like, if we say we went to, Miami, for instance, you know, we'd have to hotel it, and we have to buy a studio time, like you might get 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day or whatever, you know, which is quite expensive, you know. There's just no point in it as yet, you know.
Right, now, you're really big on the European side, especially on the live touring side. Can you tell us a bit about the European market as far as AC/DC are concerned?
The European market, they're really quite strange over there. They're a lot of freaks over there. You know? They're sort of not punk. And they're not terribly young.
I was about to say, you might feel at home if there are a lot of freaks going on. I'm sorry.
You find a few on the street after the show in the gutter.
I mean. Right.
But they're the sort of... Oh, it's really hard to say. But they're more...
Are there an emotional audience
freak,
or what?
Yeah, emotional.
Ready to rock, you know?
Probably more so than the rest of the world.
Yeah.
They're crazy because, like, European bands don't play rock music. And if they do play it, they don't play it well, you know? So the only rock they get is from England, America, and now Australia.
Right, now, let's look at 4 countries, right? You've got the USA, which you're about to leave for and do an extensive touring side. You've got the European market, you've got the British market, and you've got the Australian market. Does the band change at all, or you just play the same thing for every market and use the same approach?
Exactly the same, yeah. There's no need to change. I mean, we're what we are, and we ain't going to change for nobody. You know?
Yeah.
So it's just... But it doesn't... Like, you could put them all in one room and you couldn't tell one from the next. Like, they're just the same the world over, you know?
Well, what do you think will be the next single in Australia? Let There Be Rock?
Isn't it there yet? Isn't that the single?
I don't know, is it?
No?
Well, it's certainly not out.
A voice from heaven says yes.
A voice from heaven?
Rock.
Right. Now, what about an album?
We recorded an album last time we were back there. As yet, it's not finished. We've got a few things. We've thought about it and changed a few things. There's a live album probably coming out soon. It's taken from concerts in Glasgow, My Music Bowl. There was one recorded in Fort Lauderdale in Florida. There's about 4 in all, you know? And that might be sort of put into a live album, the best of the 4 concerts.
Right, now tell us about your American plans.
Yeah, we're going back there in a couple of weeks, a tour with Kiss, supporting Kiss, and a band called Rush you mightn't have heard of out there.
No.
You know? And we're doing about 12 dates with those bands, and a few of our own, and some co-headlining with a band called UFO.
Right, we've heard of them.
You know,
right. Yeah. Now, just on the Kiss tour, right? Have you seen Kiss perform yet live?
Yeah, I saw them in London last year.
Yeah.
Well, quite spectacular.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's going to be an amazing contrast between yourselves and obviously Kiss. Both very visual.
Well, yeah, see, the guy that what's his name? Tell me the bass player's name from Kiss.
I don't know.
No? Coral, tell me the bass player's name from Kiss. He's a popular guy, isn't he?
Coral?
He came along to our show in, or one of our shows in the Whiskey in Hollywood to see us play, you know, and he came up to us and said, look, I dig your band, and we're touring in December, and we'd like you to tour with us, you know. And they played to 80,000 people.
Yeah, right, I mean, they're huge.
So the show should be quite, you know, quite amazing.
Now, are you, on the songwriting side, have you written many songs of late? I mean, the band and yourself, or...?
Well, we haven't written. Like, it's, while we're touring, you're sort of compiling all your ideas and things you rip off from here and there around the countryside, like, you know. And I've got pages of stuff. Actually, I wrote the words to two songs about on the last tour, like on the road, and got back home and found out there was the same titles and always the same lyrics as somebody else's.
Did you?
And I was really pleased with them too. I thought, oh, this is great. Yeah.
And how's Angus going? How did Angus go over this time last year? The papers were going crazy and, you know, talking about this great little guitarist that's got so full of energy. How did he go in America?
Oh, they couldn't believe me in America.
Yeah.
No. I like the Americans are mad. Anything new, they really go crazy for it, you know? And although, like, only the rich people over there can afford to send their kids to schools where they have uniforms, this, like, the novelty of it was just overwhelmed them. And the energy the band puts out, they couldn't believe it, you know? Mm.
Why was the approach last time you were back, for that time that you were recording, to sort of almost stay low profile as far as television and all of that was concerned, and the press?
Yeah, well, you know, dig this, we've been working non-stop since the band started, you know, before 8 months before I joined the band, you know?
Yeah.
And you just got to have a break, you know? And so the main thing about being back there last time was to actually write the songs, record them, break in the new bass player to the way of the band. That's why we only played one or two gigs back there, both at the Bondi Lifesaver. Mm. You know? Just got to have a break occasionally.
Well, listen, thanks for coming on Countdown again.
It's all right.
And,
No worries, Ian. They still call you Ian, do they?
Yeah, well, Molly. And we wish you the best of luck in America.
Thank you.
And it's good to see that the album is really starting to break in, like, really starting to break into the top 200. What is it? You know, it's around about the 150 mark.
150 with an arrow.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Not quite as fast as the bullet.
As the bullet. All right, well, best of luck, and we'll look forward to seeing you come home and doing some tour dates.
Looking forward to getting back there.
Take care, Bon.
See ya.
Thanks, mate.
A legendary Bon Scott, who sadly passed away in February of 1918. To this day, the conspiracy theories are still many as to the events that led up to his untimely death. Now, it seemed almost impossible, didn't it, after that, to think a replacement could be found to step into Bon's shoes. And maybe they should just wind it all up and just go and retire on the significant wealth they were about to accrue from Highway to Hell. And certainly nobody thought that Brian Johnson was the man to lead AC/DC in this post-Bon Scott era. There weren't many names on the list. Jimmy Barnes, Angry Anderson, Gary Holton, of course, from the Heavy Metal Kids, who was also part of the Wiedersehen Pet TV show. And even, how good would this potentially have been, Noddy Holder of Slade. And mentioning Johnson, the tour manager at the time told producers that he said, "He is an effing big fat bloke." He said, "How on earth can we have an effing big fat bloke at the front of the stage?" But Brian Johnson was plucked from the brink of obscurity that was his brother's roofing company and also his own car repair business back up on Tyneside. And he was made the new singer of AC/DC. The rest, of course, is history. But just how did he feel on that very first night when he stepped out for the first time as the new lead singer with one of the biggest bands in the world?
I'll never forget this as long as I live.
And you remember that?
I mean, it was like that. I remember we were supposed to start at about 8 o'clock. And the promoter came and he said, we're going to have to put the Stade back. I said, why? Well, we're going to make the room bigger because it was a big sports hall, remember?
Yeah.
He said, we're going to pull the things out wider and push it back a bit more because there's more people than we expected. Okay. You know, I was getting ready again, you know. You know, just a half an hour. There's going to be another delay. Why? We're going to pull it back a bit more. Anyway, they kept on, they did it twice. Yeah. And I said, okay, definitely 9 o'clock. And I'll never forget, I went on stage. Do I forget that gig? I'll never forget it as long as I live.
Okay.
I walked on and I just saw all these banners. Rest in peace. On, you know. And I went, oh boy, what have I let myself in for? Oh my God, it's it's impossible. You know, how am I ever going to do this, you know, and the everywhere. But right in the middle of it, there was one banner, a big one, and it just said, good luck, Brian. That's all I needed. Yeah. I just went, phew, and that's what I wanted. I just went, oh.
Yeah, but I think you were very quick adopted by everybody around
yeah,
the world.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. It was wonderful. Yeah. And the first thing I did, we did two songs. Oh, gosh, darn it, what were the songs? The first two songs was a... it was Bad Boy Boogie and the other one. Anyway, I sang the same lyrics to both songs. I was so nervous. I sang the first song and then I sang the second one with the same words because I couldn't hear anything with the noise. And I could see the audience going,
they don't sing the same as me.
And he's going, well, he must be avant-garde rock and roll. He's singing anything he wants. And I finished it, and I was going, oh, God, what have I done? And Malcolm looked at us, and he went, the fuck was that? it was terrible. And yeah. I'll never forget, it was the first time we sang Back in Black, because all the songs were finished, and they went, yeah! And we sang Back in Black. And we finished, and they went, beep, beep. It was, you know, people were going, what's this? You know, because half of them hadn't heard it yet.
Of course.
And they were going, I could see them going, oh, shit, they don't like it. You know, it was really, I was going, oh, my God. So, you know, and we did another, which did Shook Me All Night Long, which, got, you know, with people going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this song was number one in Belgium.
Yeah.
She Shook Me All Night Long. Yeah. As a single.
Yeah.
So it was number one. Yeah.
But, you know, it was the first night. It was very, very, you know, a traumatic night, but when I came off, I just went, phew, you know, the crowd went nuts, and I went, yeah, great. Yeah. But it wasn't, I mean, it was hot, as you well remember. I mean, it was really hot, and a kid started cheering, and I suddenly felt at home. You know, I didn't feel too bad, but of course, it was Bon Scott. Not only was he a great singer, songwriter, but he had that persona where everybody felt it was his friend. You know, which is a very rare ability to have. Mm. Not many people have that, you know, and he had that with that lovely smile, that lovely wink, you know, that cheeky swagger, you know, where he wasn't after your woman, you know, it wasn't that, you know, jutting thing or proud or pompous. It was just a thing, you know, look at this, I'm just kidding, you know. And he didn't threaten the guys, you know, with his... After that woman, the guy wanted to go out with him, you know, have a drink with him just as much as his woman wanted to fuck him, whatever. You know, it was a special thing he had, and nobody can hope to copy it. I just had to do as best I can and just be me. And
and
I think that's why the boys got us, not because I sounded like Bon. You know, it's still very difficult for me to sing Bon songs because Bon had a beautifully... You know, like this, like kind of a nasally velvet thing. You know, you know, and it's you can't copy it. I'll never forget it as long as I live.
And it's so good, isn't it, to see Brian Johnson back in the fold? And let's hope that AC/DC do indeed give us one more album from that Back in Black lineup. Now, Planet Rock summoned a team of experts. We don't know who they are, but they are experts. And they were all asked, which were, or what are, the greatest AC/DC songs of all time. They came up with a definitive list of 40, and I can't read 40 of them. But we'll do the top 10, shall we? At number 10, it was Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution. At number 9, You Shook Me All Night Long. At number 8, If You Want Blood. At number 7, Highway to Hell. At number 6, Touch Too Much. At number 5, It's a Long Way to the Top If You Want to Rock and Roll. At number 4, Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. Number 3, Up to My Neck in You. Number 2 was Back in Black. And number 1 was this, said by a panel of experts to be the greatest song that AC/DC ever did.
Bye.
well, I know exactly what you're thinking, and I probably agree with you. See, the thing is here, what happens when you get these experts together? They feel if they vote or they choose for the more obvious, then it somehow makes them look less of an expert. The reality is, though, of course, that if it were you or I, or 9 out of 10 AC/DC fans polled up and down a street, that song probably would have been in the top 5. Anyway, we mustn't trifle with these people because they are experts. So let us move on. Now, we know that Cliff Williams is back in. We know that Brian Johnson is back in the fold. But also, there is the return of the drummer, Phil Rudd. And here's Brian Johnson just trying to sum up how good a drummer Phil Rudd actually is.
The use of all his fingers. And Phil, you know, I remember one of the songs had a technical breakdown in the middle of the song, and Brendan O'Brien went, "Ay, ay, ay," he said, "that was perfect, shit." Well, we're never going to get that again. Oh, yeah. God damn it. You know, something electrical had broken. And Phil went, you know, "Sugar, now, just play it and I'll join in again, we'll do it." And Brendan said, "I've tried it a million times. It's just not going to work. It's never the same." And Phil went, "Yes, it will be. It's just a fist." And I said, "Okay, we'll give it a try." And the played it through and it finished. Now, I remember Brendan O'Brien just went, and he looked at Phil and he went, "You are a machine, my friend. You are a machine." And Phil just went, "Oh, no."
It's true.
Phil's great. You know, he plays the drums and he had this piece of paper hanging off one of the cymbals. Mm. And we were going, "What's on that piece of paper?" Because it was in a drum. Nobody went in. And after about 2 weeks, I went, "I'm going to have a look at this." And it was just a big pair of tits. A photograph of the biggest pair of tits you've ever seen. I said, "What's that for?" He went, "Inspiration."
Tells a great story, doesn't he, Brian Johnson? Now, into the press review for the month. It's that time of year when we always used to look forward to bumper Christmas issues of our favourite magazines, certainly when we were growing up, with all sorts of festive content. Of course, the review of the year, where you could all argue about what was the best album, the best gig, all the usual stuff. So, where to start? Well, Classic Rock have been very, very busy in putting out product in the last couple of months or so. Firstly, the splendidly put together issue, as always, the roundup of the year. And they have it on good authority, as we've already said, that the Back in Black lineup is back and recording. As we said, Cliff Williams there, Brian Johnson there, and Phil Rudd there as well. They tell that story, albums of the year. It's arguable whether there are really 50 great albums out in the year, but they do put one list together, the standouts of their top 50, number 48, Monster Trucks, True Rockers, which I've been listening to recently. Very, very good album, actually, and they're out on tour in the UK, March and April this year. Blackstone Chariot, number 46, Family Tree there. Uriah Heep back with Living the Dream. Now, if you'd given up on them years and years ago, give this a listen, especially if you subscribe to one of the streaming companies, because it's on there, because it's where I've been listening to it. It's the best thing they've done for years and years and years. Number 16, this is a travesty for me, I'm afraid. Thunderbolt by Saxon, who just seemed to continue to defy age and everything accompanied with it and turn out outstanding British hard rock and heavy metal. Should be in the top 5. Brilliant, brilliant album that is. And they're going to go out on a massive 40th anniversary tour next year, and it will be one of the events of the year. He still does it on stage. They are a magnificent power. Wouldn't it be great if we could have a sort of new wave of British heavy metal reunion where we got all of them together? You could have the likes of Saxon, Def Leppard, Iron Maiden, all on the same bill. What a day that'd be. At number 11, they give Steve Perry's return, Traces. And whilst it's great to hear his voice again, I thought it sounded very, very dated indeed. Didn't really do anything for me. Top five, Hailstorm. Number four, Judas Priest's Firebat. Another fantastic album that was. The Struts were number two with Young and Dangerous. And Clutch, Book of Bad Decisions, number one. Really? There you go. It's very subjective, objective, whatever you like. You get Slash in conversation as well this month. The highlights of his year. Headlining Donington, of course, he said. Now, are we going to get a Guns N' Roses biopic? Never, was the answer from Slash. They catch up with Gene Simmons. This is just a few weeks before Kiss begin that epic trek around the globe on their Goodbye to Everybody tour. So is he going to miss it then when they pack it all in? And then here comes the bombshell. Well, the touring band will stop, he said, but Kiss will continue in other ways. But he added, I will be 72 by the end of the tour, and why the F would I want to be out there in a rocket-propelled wheelchair? Well said, Gene. But the best quote from Gene Simmons in this issue, he said, I'm not the best-looking guy in the world, but when I walk past a mirror, it really is difficult for me not to stand in awe of myself. Well said there, Gene. Best gigs of 2018, according to Classic Rock. The Stones in Coventry. Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets at Dingwalls. Iron Maiden anywhere they played on that epic Legacy of the Beast tour. Then, as Classic Rock magazine's 20 years old. Incredible, I remember buying the very first issue of that. They do the 20 best of the last 20 years. Here's a few of them. They included Quo at the Hammersmith Odeon, the Frantic Four's reunion from 5 years ago. Also, Rival Sons from the Classic Rock Awards a year later in Los Angeles. They just released a fantastic track from their new album. It's called Feral Roots. I saw them back with Blackstone Cherry in the Head Down days a few years back. What a great band they are live. And you'll be able to see them around the UK throughout the month of January and early February. Scott Gorham of Thin Lizzy as a chat as well. They'll be heading out as Thin Lizzy, not the Black Star Riders, this year. And he revealed, actually, how they had thought about doing a hologram tour with Phil Lynott, but it came at us too expensive. Buyer's Guide takes a look at REO Speedwagon, vastly underrated band over here in the UK. Were great on tour with Quo a couple of years ago. Anyway, in case you don't have it, then the essential buy is the multi-platinum High Infidelity, for which there is a deluxe edition somewhere. And lastly, Joe Elliott, who's all over the media. Of course, it's been a triumphant year for Def Leppard. He lets us in on the soundtrack of his life. Greatest singer of all time. Well, you can't argue with this one. Paul Rogers' greatest album, Mott by Mott the Hoople, who are also, remember, out on a mini tour this year. So, as ever, Classic Rock stuffed full of all sorts of good stuff. And they also have a Classic Rock annual out at the same time as well. And some good stuff in there. Biff Byford talking about a night back in 1982 at the Whiskey A Go-Go. Remember, Saxon had just broken pretty big over in the States there as well. And he says Saxon was sat in-house and also in at the bar. Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne, Motley Crue came bursting in to come over and sit with them and drink. And over on stage, four young blokes called Metallica were making a bit of a noise. What a night that must have been. And he also talks about reliving the early days with Motorhead on the road. And he said Lemmy used to feed us vodka and orange, saying that it was breakfast as it had orange juice in it. Or the fact that they were partying, believe it or not, with, wait for it, Pan's People. Now, those of you that are, I would say 20 or 30, you probably don't even remember Top of the Pops, but this was a program that used to be on every Thursday night. You never used to see any hard rock or heavy metal on it until the 1980s. And Saxon were selling Wheels of Steel at the time, and Biff talks very candidly, but he will not reveal what happened when the boys from Barnsley headed out onto the town in London with that famous dance troupe. Now, the publishers of Classic Rock have also got out the Blues Collection, which is stuffed full of features and interviews with the likes of Hendrix, Howlin' Wolf, Peter Green, just to name a few. And that is not all, because they also have a Led Zeppelin special out, which is still around. There was an earlier one with AC/DC, which was very good as well, which is also worth having. In prog this month, front cover, it is Rush. The main feature is around the 40th anniversary of Hemispheres. Geddy Lee points out that basically when you've been around for as long as we have, almost every day is an anniversary of something, pointing out that somebody he'd seen posted on a website somewhere that it was the 33rd anniversary of Mystic Rhythms, which was released from the Power Windows album. Great album that was as well. So Hemispheres found them turning up to Rockfield Studios deep in Wales with nothing less than a few bits of paper with a few things written down on, and 4 weeks in which to record and produce an album. It is a long story, and basically they ran out of time in the end and had to head into London to finish it. But and as those of you who have the album will be very aware, when Lee sang, those notes he had to hit were very, very high indeed. In fact, he says much higher than he had actually imagined. So it was no easy feat making it all come together. And then, of course, there was the album cover as well, Brains and All. Fascinating piece, fascinating magazine. Great album, though, Hemispheres. Record Collector put together a list of the best 70 albums of the last 70 years. Don't know why they didn't do 60 of 60, 50 of 50, but they just did 70 of 70, just to be different. And they look in and catch up with a man once described as the great doomed romantic showman of our time. Remember who that is? Nope. P.J. Proby, who is still alive, and he recently turned 80. And as ever, as you would always expect, and this is another one of those questions, if it were me, I would ban any reporter from asking. So, after all of the booze and the other substance abuses, are you still surprised to be here? Answer, yes. A secret of his survival, I gave up drink in 1992, when I dropped dead. Sorry, what was that? Yes, he actually died 5 times. His heart stopped on the way to hospital. A memorable tale indeed, which includes sage-like advice from Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin on how to be able to get up and drink all day. The secret? Sip your drink. Only sip. Never gulp. Never down it in one. Just sip. And for those of you boys and girls out there who believe that they could drink him under the table or think, you know, you're a bit of a hero of the bar, here's a rundown of his daily menu. So, 3 Bloody Marys for breakfast, then start on the beer. But this wasn't just any old beer, no. This was Carlsberg's special brew, on that all day until about, say, 11 o'clock. Then, when the TV went off and I'd saluted the Queen, I'd go out to a nightclub, and that is when the real drinking start. Which was? Bourbon, of course. Excellent interview with PJ Proby. Apart from the first question, obviously. It's like that question they always ask bands, well, you've been around 50 years, are you thinking about retiring? Now, moving back to the 70 from the last 70. We're not going to do the entire list. I'll pick a few out of them. So, 70 years ago, they picked out as being the best album Stan Kenton and his orchestra with a presentation of progressive jazz. Moving up to 1962, Howlin' Wolf by him. 67, The Velvet Underground, with The Velvet Underground and Nico, produced by Andy Warhol, of course. Into the 70s, 74 was Kraftwerk's Autobahn. Is that really that old? 1984, this gets in the list of the 70 best. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. Some of the selections got even more depressing after that, so we'll move on. There's also lists of the year live reviews. They include a review of Saxon at the Roundhouse in London. They were described as blistering and still at the top of their game. Spot on, as we said, Thunderbolt, one of the best albums of the year. Now, Mojo magazine have a Gallagher on the front cover. Inside, plenty of features as well, including one on one of Birmingham's finest, described here as psychedelic dandies. And it isn't Black Sabbath, it is, of course, the Moody Blues. Plus, 50 years on, they celebrate Mick Jagger's performance in Performance. And the Doors, as they headed back as well on this article to a steamy night in Miami in 1969 inside the Diner Auditorium, where Jim Morrison, before the night's events began, welcomed the crowd and the assembled masses by yelling out of the microphone, "You're all a bunch of effing idiots." What a welcome. It was quite a week, actually, for Morrison leading up to that time, who had arrest warrants all over the place for all manner of charges, from lewd and lascivious behaviour, exposing himself, simulating a sexual act, in fact, two of them, actually, public profanity, and drunkenness. They also expand on their first trips to Europe, and in particular to Amsterdam, where they said that Morrison was being given blocks of hashish and stuff and ended up collapsed in hospital, missing the shows. Loads of good stuff in this interview, by the way, in Mojo, so catch up with that. And that is it then for the press reviews. We haven't got time to get all of them in again this month, and unfortunately, as we've run out of time, we're going to have to hold over until next month all the features we missed out this month, including the greatest live track from a live album ever. It will be back, I promise, next month. Now, thanks for tuning in, and once again, if you've got any comments to make or you want to get in touch, download the very excellent Anchor podcast app, where you can actually leave recorded voice comments if you like. You can also get in touch on Facebook or Twitter at Rock Classics 7. So until next time, have a fantastic new year, and we'll see you back again in 2019.